Hello, I'm Preston Schlankofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. This week we have Arthur T. Bradley. He's a NASA electrical engineer and an author. So let's welcome Arthur to the show. Welcome back, Arthur.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yes. It's been quite a while. You were with us in episode 4, right in the beginning of our existence. And so now some 70 some odd episodes later, you finally came back.
Well, great. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yeah, me too. So I think today I would like to discuss what you've been up to. I know you've got some great products that you've been working on. And you have them out now. We talked about them, I think, a little bit in the first show. But then you're also an accomplished author, and you've got 12 books out there. And maybe you can describe one of those books that may be closest to the scenario that we're living through right now.
Sure. Well, yeah, so I actually have about 16 or 17 books. But the one that's probably most relevant is I wrote a series. Oh, gosh, I guess it's been going on now for 5 years or so. It's called The Survivalist, and it was way before the COVID, of course, but it's always been a big worry of mine. A global pandemic's always been at the top of my list, and every time anyone's asked me over the years, I've always told them that. And it's just because these things happen every so often, and there's really little we can do to prevent them from happening. Now, how we respond is another thing, but so I had the idea a few years back of writing a kind of an adventure story that put a lot of preparedness and survival tips sort of rolled into the story. And that's what led me to write The Survivalist. And in that setting, you know, the world has sort of been destroyed by a global pandemic that all starts becomes some sort of evildoer who's a virologist sort of lets it loose on the world. And, you know, not terribly different than maybe what we're seeing today, depending on what your theory is of how it all got out. But anyway, so that book series is a 12-book series, and it really just follows a U.S. Marshal and his father, who's a convict, sort of an all-around nasty guy who has good intentions but sort of not necessarily good means, and how they just sort of, you know, go and disseminate their brand of justice in this wasteland of what's left in the United States. And so that's kind of probably the most, you know, similar to what we're experiencing now is that Survivalist series.
Okay. Now, you have a number of books. When I was first doing my research and developing my concept of civil defense, I purchased one book. It was Disaster Preparedness for EMP Attacks and Solar Storms. That was a really good book. And then I followed it up with the Disaster Preparedness Manual and also the Prepper's...
Yeah, Prepper's Instruction Manual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got it right here. Yeah, Prepper's Instruction Manual, 50 Steps to Prepare for Any Disaster, which, you know, you're writing in these prepper books have been very easy, very understandable, and you can follow the guides that you have as far as preparing and doing your threat assessments and things like that. So the manual is the most complete, and it has a lot of great benefit to it. But for a quick read, the prepper's manual is probably the easiest to get through.
Right. Yeah. The overall sort of the big volume, the Handbook to Practical Disaster Preparedness, really is like an all-inclusive, you know, 450-page book with lots of tables and figures, and tries to teach people how do you create a disaster preparedness plan? You know, how do you put together a real plan for your family? It's not something I ever really saw out there, and I read a lot of the disaster books, and so that I wrote that to try and help people put together reasonable plans. And then the Prepper's Instruction Manual was really like the highlights of that book, just in like actionable steps. And so it's like, you know, 50 steps you can take to be way better prepared than maybe you are today. And you're right, it's easy reads. Each of those steps might only be, you know, a few pages of content, but it tries to get you to think about, you know, food storage and water purification, things like that, that might be useful to you as you put together, you know, an effective strategy.
Yes, I think the Prepper's Instruction Manual is probably one that is easy for anybody to pick up and start going through and saying, okay, I can do this, I can do that. okay, I need those and things like that. You know, you've got all kinds of topics in here, 50 different topics, food caches, water purifiers, grab-and-go bags, waterless toilets, amateur radios, first aid kits, precious metals, cert training, generators, and it goes on and on and on. But there's practical steps in each one that helps to understand what you should be doing. And, you know, going back to the communication aspect, like a ham radio, it's imperative to be in contact with others in a crisis. So sometimes ham is the only thing that may be available.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you to give a brief bio of yourself. Can you do that now, and then we'll move into your understanding of what we're living through now?
Sure. Yeah. So my background is, you know, like, I'm an electrical engineer. I work at NASA. You mentioned that. And I'm a branch head of a large electronics group at NASA. And so my day job is to, you know, supervise the design and development of electronics. And my sort of after hours hobby, as it were, for a number of years now, has been in the practical disaster preparedness realm, you know, trying to figure out how do we weather dangerous events and how do I help people do that. And so I started writing books, I guess it's probably been about 8 years ago or so, 8 or 10 years ago. And that first book, Handbook to Practical Disaster Preparedness, was really all about that, which was all the research I'd sort of done compiled into one volume that I thought might help people. And so after hours, I was busy writing books. I wrote nonfiction first. I wrote the EMP book, and I wrote that handbook, and then I wrote that prepper's instruction manual. And then I thought, well, I'll try my hand at a little fiction. I always say everybody's got at least one good story in them. And so I started out on that pandemic idea of the world sort of being destroyed by a pandemic and following a couple of heroes and around through it, and wrote that, you know, started off with one book, and it ended up catching on. People kind of liked the story flow, and they liked the style of writing, and they liked the adventure of it. And so it ended up keep going. And I just finished the series, months ago, with the 12th book. And so it's a 12 book series called The Survivalist. And that was sort of my foray into fiction. I've just now started a new fictional series. The very first book is probably going to come out in about 2 to 3 months. It's complete. It just has to be all put all together. And it's titled The Watchman. And it's set back in the late 1800s. So it's a little different, but it's very similar in style to The Survivalist, in terms of its writing style. But it follows sort of a special agent of the U.S. government as he travels the Old West, sort of unraveling paranormal mysteries and setting things right and that kind of stuff. And I'm enjoying writing it. I hope people enjoy reading it. But that's sort of my after-hours thing, is to do writing books. And I do some consulting as well. I do some consulting on EMP preparedness for companies, and sometimes for individuals, usually for companies, though, make sure they're taking the right steps to be prepared against that threat. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Now, there's been some negative press lately about the true threat from EMP and solar flares. Can you give us a little insight into what the truth is about that type of threat?
Well, I can give you my insight of my understanding of it. You know, keep in mind, we've never had an EMP attack on the United States or any other country, so some of it's conjecture, right? But there have been large-scale simulations of EMPs. There have been EMPs even created, like Russia has done some. We've done so unintentionally through some detonation of the bombs. So we know there is such a thing as an electromagnetic pulse. When you detonate a nuclear warhead in the atmosphere, you will generate an electromagnetic pulse. There's no scientist who doubts that. The doubting is, well, what would the effects be? And people are basing the effects on some of the things that were done back in the 60s, like the Starfish Prime experiments, where they blew up things over the ocean. And many hundreds of miles away, 700-800 miles away, they saw, you know, fairly serious effects on electronics. There was surges introduced in things and caused some damage and so forth. And so the idea, and those were much, much smaller EMPs than we would be able to generate if we were intentionally trying to do so. And so the idea is, if an enemy wanted to cause, you know, problems for a country, maybe without a full-scale attack, they would perhaps detonate a warhead high overhead in the atmosphere, talking about many, many miles, maybe hundreds of miles, 100 or 200 miles maybe. And it wouldn't hurt anyone. No, most people would never even see it. But that pulse that would essentially propagate down to the surface could cause lots and lots of damage, the most serious of which would be to the electrical grid. And many, many simulations have been done and studies have been done. And the expectation is that the ground currents that would flow into these power lines would cause damage to these very large-scale transformers. And transformers just convert high voltage down to low voltage so you can use it in your home. And if you blow out those big building-sized transformers, they're very, very difficult to replace. There's very few spares, and they're not built by the United States. And if you took out large numbers of them, you know, estimates are it could be 3 months, it could be 6 months, it could be a year before the grid was brought back up. And who knows how accurate that is, but I do think it's a very serious threat if you can take out the U.S. power grid. And the grid's very complicated. It has, you know, all of the different interconnects, five different interconnects, and lots of people involved in it. But if you can disable it, even just for, you know, months, a couple months at a time, you would have huge, tremendous impacts on our country, unlike anything people have ever seen before. It would be just tremendous. People are so dependent on electricity now to stay alive. I think it would be tremendous. And so, you know, an enemy actor would detonate a nuclear warhead high in the atmosphere. That in turn would create a large electromagnetic disturbance, which would propagate down to the surface, and that could damage a large number of things. It could damage the electrical power grid, which is the most serious of all the impacts, or it could damage freestanding small-scale electronics like phones and computers, cars, things like that. And the debate comes in really not in whether or not it would generate an EMP. Everybody already knows that. That's been known for, I guess, about 60 years. But the debate comes into what would be the extent of the damage. And nobody knows exactly the extent because the EMP weapons today are much, much more powerful than they were back in the 60s. And so the idea is that most experts who have looked at it said, well, it would certainly disturb the power grid because these large currents would flow up into these transformers. And we're talking about transformers the size of your house or bigger. And these transformers would be, you know, they would get too much current in them, they would burn windings, they would essentially burn up and be damaged. And there's nobody really who can fix them, so they have to be replaced. And we don't build them, we don't have spares or very few spares. And so it would be this huge impact for the United States if those transformers were damaged. Some people have predicted up to a year without electrical power in some areas. And you can imagine what life would be like without electrical power. Everybody's just so dependent on it. I mean, we all are, from water purification to the way food is distributed to emergency services, everything, the electricity is the lifeblood of all of it, banking, you know, businesses. So it would have a huge disturbance if the grid were to manage to be taken down. As far as personal electronics like cars and things like that, there is a lot of debate about whether or not they would be permanently damaged. And it depends on, you know, what field levels you would experience and things like that. Now, my best guess is that there would certainly be some damage to small-scale electronics. Testing has revealed that. But it probably would not be, you know, every living piece of electrical item out there in the world would be destroyed. I don't believe that would be the case. But I think some things, radios, cars certainly might have some damage. There would certainly be some things that could be damaged. And I think the overall impact of an EMP or multiple EMPs on the United States would be tremendous. I think it would be many trillions of dollars worth of damage and a great loss of life unless our government was, you know, able to really step up in terms of distributing supplies and taking care of people. And my view of that is we've never done a great job of that. And I don't know that we would at that moment in time step up and rise to the occasion either. So I think it's a very serious threat. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about EMPs. And so that's one reason why people don't believe parts of it. You know, there's a lot of sort of fictional nonsense that gets mixed in with it. And so I think it's hard to sort reality from fact. And but I do think it's something people should consider and learn a little bit more about.
Yeah, I agree. Now, there's I talk to people every once in a while who tell me, we would know that you know, North Korea or somebody would be attacking us. So, you know, we just retaliate and wipe them off the face of the earth. So that would be, you know, they wouldn't do that. Well, there's ways and they've practiced in the Mediterranean and other places where they have taken a freighter and launched a missile, and you know, basically a test to see, you know, proof of concept. And so sure. that can surely happen.
Well, no, I was just going to agree with you completely. I think the threat is unlikely that Russia proper would launch, you know, for example, an attack like that on the U.S. without being a full-scale war, right? Because we'd know, we'd see the missile coming in time, we'd know it came from Russia, we would decide whether or not to launch our own nuclear missile. I mean, it would be not something that a country would engage in with a nuclear power like the United States. But just like you said, a rogue nation, an Iran who happened to get a hold of a nuclear warhead, a North Korea, somebody like that, who could manage to deploy it from, you know, the Gulf of Mexico or something, and nobody would know for some period of time, perhaps, maybe not ever, who deployed it, and the amount of damage and chaos it would put in our country, you know, we might never be able to fully recover and digest who did it and be able to retaliate. I mean, it's not always as obvious. That kind of guerrilla warfare is very difficult sometimes to respond to.
Yes, yes, it is. And, you know, it's almost like the perfect attack. There's also another threat through the cyber realm, which for the last 10 years, to my understanding, we've been receiving these large transformers that have been made in China. And recently, we've discovered that there's back doors that they have created so that they can do monkey business with our grid through those backdoor access.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. We've had a number of cyber attacks on our infrastructures for, I don't know, at least a decade or more, and a lot of it's by Russia, some by North Korea, some by China. You know, all of our enemies, if we'll be so bold, they're enemies. They're wanting to do us harm. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me anything. You know, there's the big things with the TikTok is the big thing today, although I have to say I don't fully understand that. But there's, you know, anything that the countries, like, for example, working at NASA, we were unable to use certain types of unmanned air vehicles because they had cameras that were made in China. And they found spyware in the camera technology. And so,
yeah,
again, you know, does it surprise me? No, it doesn't surprise me a bit. You know, they're an enemy, and the enemy's going to try and gather information about you. And if they can get that through video footage of your NASA bases or your military bases, great. You know, that's good for them. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me, but it is quite dangerous. I know Russia, for example, has done a few attacks on some of our, like, water treatment plants, and we're actually able to shut some down and cause some interference. And all that is just probing, you know, they're probing to see what they can do in case there were a large-scale activity. They wouldn't necessarily have to attack the United States. They could just try and disrupt the United States. So I think it's a real threat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ted Koppel, $100 Ted, in his book Lights Out that was published in 2015, it talks all about the Russians, Chinese, and Iranians and North Koreans in our grid. And so, you know, it's not new. Everybody in power in America should know about these threats. It just ticks me off when I read an article from somebody who's trying to play down the threat, and all it is misinformation.
Yeah, a lot of times they don't fundamentally understand it, and they view it as, you know, fear-mongering. And there is fear-mongering in all of preparedness. There's a lot of people who engage in fear-mongering to make money. But it doesn't mean there aren't real threats out there either. And you're right, it's very frustrating when you look at the data, you look at the evidence and the experts, and you go, well, this is a real threat. This is something we should pay attention to. And then you see people who have done 15 minutes of research, reading whatever websites, and they all of a sudden they're an expert to say, oh, this is nothing to, there's nothing to this. This is just a waste of time. And yeah, it's very frustrating to see that.
Yeah. Being a fan of yours, I recently bought a couple Faraday bags for mine and my wife's cell phones. Can you give us some insight into some of the things that you have been working on, some of the products to help your home stay safe, and other things in your home to be, for being prepared and keep them safe?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'm always looking for interesting things that either other people have made that, you know, I think I can recommend to people, or that I saw a need and I developed something. So there's a few things I can mention. One is, you mentioned those Faraday bags. You know, those are lightweight, small bags that you can put your cell phone in that will prevent your phone from being tracked. That's the idea of it, that the cell service providers are tracking phones. There's been a number of cases now where they've shown that. And people don't necessarily want to always have their positions tracked. And even if you shut your phone off, it can still be pinged. And so this gives you a way in which there's no RF energy able to be received either direction from the phone. And so it's a, you know, to me, it, maybe it's, some people might say it's a little paranoid, but it, we really do live in a world where when technologies get developed, like the ability to track people, it never seems to quite get turned off when you don't need it. And so I thought those little bags, I had them custom made. I tested them all out to make sure they work. I thought they were a worthwhile thing. So they're called anti-tracking bags. And I originally made them because people were worried about the EMF from their phones, or the electromagnetic fields that come off the phones. And I originally made them for that. But then once all the coronavirus started and people start being worried about tracking and things, they work really well for that because they cut off all the signal. So that was one product. The others were, I came up with just recently some, I call them survivor symbol cards. They're little credit card type devices that go in your wallet. I do a video on my website, disasterprepare.com, where I test how well they work. And basically, if you put one card in your wallet, it prevents all of your credit cards from being remotely skimmed. Like if somebody brings a skimmer close to your wallet, they could skim the credit card information. And that one card prevents that. It sort of protects your whole wallet. And it's really cool technology. I won't go into on the interview here, but it's pretty neat. It functions so well that you can have something almost 3 inches away from the card and it still prevent that credit card from being skimmed, which is really pretty fantastic. And then I had it printed. I had the cards printed with some symbols that I thought would be pretty cool, where if people were in a, like a real national emergency and you're maybe having to get from place A to place B, you could either leave or look for symbols that people had left behind that would say things like, this area is safe, or there's water available here, or, whatever, the lots of symbols that can be created from that, those things on that card. And if everybody, a lot of folks had those cards, then you all kind of speak a universal language, if you will, to leave things behind for preppers or to see what people have left behind to let you information. So I thought that was a pretty neat product. They're called Survivor Symbol Cards. They protect your wallet, but they also sort of give you some information that you always have with you. And then there's other things I've worked on over the, I'm not sure if last time I talked to you, I had the high saturation ferrites for homes. The idea of protecting your home from an EMP is, at least my method, is you put a really heavy-duty surge protector at the breaker box. I like the Siemens FS-140. I don't sell it. I just really love it. I took probably 20 surge pressers apart, and it was the one by far that had the most protective components in it. And so I like that product, and I recommend it. And then but what you really need is you need some ferrites on the incoming power wires as well for the very high-frequency energy and to slow that down and widen it a little bit. And so I came up with a way to do that with some ferrites, some whole house ferrites. And you basically buy 3 or 4 of them, depending on how your house is wired, and you put them around your input wire feeds from the power company. And they help to slow down those really fast surges. And then the surge protector clicks on when the surge gets high enough and shunts the energy away. And it does a pretty good job of protecting homes from lightning or from other things as well. So those are some of the kind of interesting things I got recently going on that people seem to be interested in them, and they've been pretty successful.
Yeah, it's a growing market, really. There's other products out there on the market. I don't know their viability. I have some friends who are waiting for samples to test, but so far, as from what I have heard, they haven't been provided anything, which I'm part of the Secure the Grid Coalition, and we've got people with your caliber of training and expertise in specifically in EMP and that realm, and so there's a lot of knowledge there, even going back to the original EMP event in the South Pacific. So there's people looking at different products and they don't go looking for them, but if they're submitted, then they'll check them out and give them their good housekeeping seal of approval, so to speak. But
sure.
Yeah. But you know, this is a good idea, these ferrites. You know, I'm on your website here, and you've got a little video, and you've got a description on how it works, things like that. So there's a lot of information for anybody who wants to know more about it and understand what, you know, what it does. And can you give your website again?
Oh, sure. My website is disasterpreparer.com.
Okay. Disasterpreparer.com.
I try and do, you know, real world tests of things, and you know, I'm kind of a teacher at heart. I do teach after hours at a local college, but so I try and teach people too, you know, about what to look for and what the technology really does and stuff, especially like about surge protectors and EMP topics. I do a lot of that sort of lecturing on that stuff. And so, you know, people have a lot of the same question. How do I protect my solar panels? You know, how do I protect my home? Is my car in danger? You know, the things that are sort of pretty common questions. I try and do videos to answer some of those and talk about why that is. And then people can always reach out to me individually too and ask me questions if they have things that I haven't answered.
Yeah. So this whole house ferrite, that's a homeowner install. You don't need an electrician for that, do you?
Well, the legal answer is yes. You should never work inside of your panel without an electrician, right? So okay. That is the legal answer. But I put mine on. I would venture to say 99% of the people who buy them put their own on, because you just click them around the wires, right? You don't have to undo anything. You just open up the panel and click them around the feeds coming in. But that's not to say there's no danger. Anytime you open up your panel, there's hot wires in there that if you lay your hand on them, you're going to regret it.
Right.
So I always say, you know, I always on all my paperwork, I always say, you know, have an electrician installed, but I understand that most everyone probably puts them on themselves. Now, surge protectors are sort of similar. You know, I put my own surge protector on. It's a four-wire connection into your panel. But again, you got to know what you're doing, yeah, or you can hurt yourself. And so I would think more people probably do have surge protectors put in by electricians just because they might be a little uncertain how to wire them in, whereas ferrites really just click around the wires.
Yeah. Well, we had a few years ago, we had an electrician come over and build a second panel for us. We have a lockout now so that when the power goes off, we can run our portable generator that comes on and powers the house and all that. So we have that. But we need to get another electrician in to add a couple fuses over to that lockout. So we may have to get some of these ferrites to add in there at the same time. Anything else that's going on that you could update us on that we haven't talked about so far?
So, the big news on my end was, you know, I had a lot of downtime, just as sort of an aside with all the COVID thing. We've been teleworking like a lot of people for about 4 months, and I had some time to do things that might be interesting to people. I did a from a ground up AR-15 build, which was my first ever. I mean, I'm an AR-15 guy. I mean, I was in the Army with M-16s and stuff, but I had never built one, you know, from springs to, you know, end to end kind of thing. And I did that and did a video of it, shared my experiences on YouTube. My channel's Disaster Prepper on YouTube. If anybody wants to watch a video, it's about an hour long, I think, of me sort of building from start to finish a pretty cool AR-15. That's something interesting. Like I said, I wrote a whole book called The Watchman, which I think is really pretty cool. Maybe people will give that some consideration too. I started a Patreon channel just like yesterday, Arthur Bradley. It's Patreon/Arthur Bradley, which is kind of nice. If people are interested in getting any products from me, it's really a good idea to just join the Patreon thing. You can get a 20% discount on anything on the website. And the cost of the Patreon is, you know, you'll definitely save that easily, very quickly. And so I always tell people, if you're getting ready to buy something, just join the you can always drop it after a month, but you can join it and then buy whatever you want. If you don't think there's enough content, you don't have to keep being a patron, but it's a pretty good way for people to get a discount and maybe see some of the other things I'm doing too.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. I've been building ARs for a while. I went crazy for a while there.
It's addictive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I like the AR pistol format. And so I built a few of those, and I built a 308 last year, but I built it for hunting season, but I didn't get a chance to use it because I had shoulder surgery. So it wiped me out for hunting, but it's all ready to go for this year. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, it's fun. I just before I retired in 2015, I went through the Colt Armor School. So I learned all about the AR-15 and the 1911. I went through SIG Academy, their armor course. I learned all about SIG, and then I did a Glock also. So, I had all that, and the two that I really, really like are my Glocks and ARs, because they're just fun to play with, and tinker and all that. I don't like cleaning them after I shoot them, but
I don't either.
I do like building them, and each one is different. I have multiple calibers, and it's just fun.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Can you give us some ways for people to reach out to you? I know we've got your website now. We've got your Patreon. You said you had a YouTube, which is what again?
It's Disaster Prepper.
Is there any other besides your Amazon?
Yeah, so they can find my books, obviously, on Amazon. Just you can search Arthur Bradley and Survivalist or something like that. But there's a lot of books on there from that. And then my website's disasterpreparer.com. There's a contact me button on there too if anybody wants to reach out to me that way. And like I said, the Patreon is a new way. I just started that up, but that's a way to get, and one of the nice things about that is I don't mind answering a quick email. People write me emails every day with questions. But if you want to have like a real conversation, like, a 30-minute conversation on what should I do to protect this or something, it's nice if you're a supporter, then we can have a phone call or something that, and offer a little more in-depth advice, which is kind of a neat thing with that too. So I'm pretty easy to find. If you search Arthur Bradley, you'll find me pretty easy.
Well, that's good. And I will put all this stuff in the show notes. So all you got to do is scroll down from the show here, and you will find all his contact information in his various websites. And so civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page right at the top at civildefenseradio.com. And be sure to check out our Facebook page at Civil Defense Radio and Twitter at civil_def_radio. And I just started on Instagram at Civil Defense Radio and YouTube at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. So some of our older episodes are going up on YouTube there. And so Arthur, I wish to thank you for coming back on the show. It's been great having you here again, and I look forward to having you back again soon. And I also like to thank our friends who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being on the show with us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.